I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to create a great culture myself. So I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas I wrote about in the book and to get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better.
Hello everybody, on today's Culture Makers podcast I talk to Tam C. Nguyen, who is a man of many skills. He is an advisor, speaker, adjunct professor, associate professor, and is currently deputy director of research at St. Vincent's Hospital here in Melbourne. He is also on the board of directors of a startup and is at the forefront of culture building in the world of artificial intelligence. And he joins us now.
Hello, Tam. Thank you so much for joining me on the Culture Makers podcast today.
No, thank you for having me on this program. I've listened to previous one, really enjoy it, and it's a real privilege to be on this podcast that you are producing.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I've got loads of questions to ask you. I have to say, looking through your LinkedIn profile, it's the longest LinkedIn profile I've ever seen. You've done more education than anyone I've ever seen in the history. You've been into England, Scotland, even South Australia. Wow. Look at that. So I feel like there's so much to talk about. Where did it all start, Tam, for you? Where kind of was home? What, you know, what did you study? What did you want to be when you grew up?
So I'll keep it very brief. So I came across to Australia when I was a teenager. Dad came out as a refugee back in the early 80s. Grew up in Australia and South Australia, as you mentioned. We usually live in Sydney, but I grew up in South Australia, did all my undergrad there, and then move across and work in Melbourne, and sort of been here ever since. And some of the other part of the world I've been to, I thought you said South America, which I was in South America. It's Mexico, where I did part of my MBA study. And it's fabulous. And I think that's where I learn a lot about different culture. And I love the observation of different cultures. And I think that's where, you know, part of my, I guess maybe obsession is learning about different culture, as in the culture in general. But I guess what we're talking about is the culture of our workplace, or whether it's in innovations or in startups, you know, we can happy to talk about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, social culture, really interesting one, because, you know, it's something I get asked a lot, particularly, you know, when I go into a new place and talk about workplace culture, and they say, well, what about where everybody's from? And as you mentioned, you're from Vietnam. What did your dad do, Tam? What did he do?
Yeah, so my dad was in the army, American as an interpreter. So it's, again, you know, growing up in Australia with that sort of sense. I mean, he's had that exposure with the kind of the Western culture, but I think at the same time maintaining our heritage as well. And that's what something I'm also teaching my kids too. But I think getting that balanced view and you know, just when you look at, say, I think the latest report from the AICD talking about in terms of the culture, but also senior executive having sort of somewhat lack of that sort of working in different culture, I think could potentially stem out, you know, with some of the issues that we might have seen. So for example, something like only 5% of the senior executives speak another language, or you know, something similar, single digit, that actually working somewhere else, sort of in a different environment. So that's an, you know, sort of interesting observation too.
Yeah, it is, because where we're from in the world, or where people are from in the world, obviously has an impact on kind of the working culture too. I'm working with an organization in Malaysia who have about four different social cultures, and then you've got to bring all of those social cultures together and kind of define that working culture, which is something certainly throughout your studies. You know, I mentioned a few of the places you went to Mexico as well, which I didn't know. Is that something you'll have seen a lot? And you, obviously you'll be working with other students, working with other fellows. and creating, you know, what I call subcultures as well, to make sure that you understand each other and can get the best out of each other, right?
Correct, correct, yeah. And if I could sort of go back to really my first job, you know, as a research engineer at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne, where I work in the team, really multidisciplinary, you know, teams of orthopedic surgeon, other physicians, allied health and physio. And I'm sort of the engineers coming in there, sort of bring it all together and working in that team. And you learn, first of all, you learn different language, learn different way how people were trained. You know, we all have our profession in terms of training. And sort of referring to your book, you know, in terms of when you train in that sort of setting in project management, it's very different when we speak about project management to, say, a surgeon, right? And whereas you and I having sort of that training in that project management from that technical perspective. And I think, you know, it's that's where you learn and seeing from the other side, you know, the people perspective as well, which is quite great. And for someone like me, who I love to observe and learn, because you, and then growing up with that, again, back to that social culture that we mentioned about, I've got the sort of the best view of both worlds, you know, my Australian, you know, westernized way of, you know, bringing up, but also my heritage, my Vietnamese heritage, and you know, kind of balance it out. So not saying which one is better than other, but yeah, that sort of balance, which is great.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We can't ignore where we're from. I joke all the time, I'm from the UK, and if you want to find out, you know, kind of how I really feel, ask me about the weather. That's how you find out, you know, and that's my social culture. Like, I'm a guy, you know, generally my personality, I like to take risks, and yeah, I'll join a queue like every other English person that I know. We love to queue. You can't kind of ignore kind of where you're from, your upbringing, but what you want to do is make sure, and I think this is something that you just mentioned, is how do I take all of the good about where I'm from and what's good about my culture and kind of assimilate it with these people that I'm working with?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where, you know, it's taking that, the adaptability as well, you know, as a working professional, you learn new things. And if you apply, you know, quite frankly, what I've learned last century to where things are at now, it's not going to work. You have to constantly learn, but also adapt as well. Learning new things is one thing, but the ability to actually bring that across, to adapt and to implement, is another thing. There's always new thing, and you know, we're constantly learning, but the ability to adapt and implement what we've learned is another thing.
Constantly learning. You're definitely constantly learning. Like, I normally ask at the end of the podcast, I would say, how are you keeping yourself relevant? Man, I've never seen anyone keep themselves relevant like you have. So tell me a bit about biomechanics and biomedical engineering. Is that something you kind of really wanted to do? Is it something that you fell into? Were you like, I just want to study this? You know, how did that all come about?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting now. I mean, I, you know, with career, providing advice, career advice to undergrad students and postgrad. And even at some point in my early days, you know, I'll be going to high school and talking about career. So you got to follow your passion and what you're good at. If I was in the alternative universe, what would I be doing? And I'll tell you a bit later as well. But in terms of bioengineering, I was sort of denying it. I love maths and science, right? And the ability to combine that with sort of the medical side of thing. And at the time, that was the perfect fit. And looking at, you know, we were probably one of the first few cohort of that course back in South Australia. And a lot of my colleagues gone on, you know, in that space and explore to other part of health medical research. And I mentioned about my first job at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne. And they really take an interest in biomechanics, looking, study the way people move, how the simulation helps the surgeon to determine what sort of, you know, so this is dealing with kids with cerebral palsy, with sort of movement disorder. Do you do sort of aggressive surgical intervention, or do you rehab? Do you do what sort of thing? And so I'm coming in with that sort of technical science, say, okay, well, so this is what we do. And basically looking at ways to do some of that predictions as well. So that's the interest on the, I guess, the science, mathematics, engineering apply into the medical world. And where I am at the moment as Deputy Director of Research at St. Vincent Hospital, we've got a big program in that space as well in 3D printing. And, you know, this is the exciting part because 3D printing, it's almost like in the science fiction movie in the early mid-80s when I grew up. And it's the way we actually, so as one of our surgeons said, it's human engineering. In a way, you know, applying technology and actually improve health outcomes for our patient. So 3D printing of body parts, bone, tissue engineering, rebuilding, and on the bionic side, and exciting stuff, looking at implants that can actually monitor and actually, to a certain extent, reduce the seizures in patients with epilepsy, for example. So that's, I mean, I get to work or seeing a lot of this exciting technology.
Fascinating. And it's life-changing stuff for people. It's fabulous. And I often think, particularly in the medical environment and in hospitals, is what it requires is high levels of collaboration, is knowing really kind of when to pull together. Of course, there's some individual activity, much like any workplace. Is that something that you see, particularly in your line of work? Is it something that you work on a lot? Is, you know, kind of how do we build that culture? How do we collaborate? How do we respond to certain situations? Is that something that's front of mind for you guys?
Yeah, and I think, you know, coming back to really reflecting on my, and you know how in terms of HBR reading that your first boss or first few boss really influence you, your career and so on and so forth. And if you unfortunately have a sort of not great boss, could
turn you into we've all been there, Tom.
Yeah, that's right. It's almost like that book, Good People, Bad Managers, you know. But no, in terms of in the healthcare system, in the way we run, and then take for instance COVID pandemic, which, you know, one would argue that we still sort of at the tail end, you know, so we're not completely out yet. Culture is so important in the way that we got to manage it. So culture, my way of thinking is simple. It's part of change management, right? So you want to change something, you really got to, you know, tackle from different aspects of the organization. So the whole thing, top down, bottom up, and across as well. Okay. So in the healthcare setting, you know, you've got typically most of the hospital run by most of the time non-medical. So you've got to really work with your clinicians, your medical colleagues. And then within that sort of framework, there's other, you know, sort of professions as well. So the culture often comes in when the organization has that same vision, that same mission that we all have. But how we actually changing is, as I said, it's that change management. Okay, so the first wave, second wave of pandemic, how we manage it, and culture is so important in the way we communicate as well. So I think that's really, and leaders in particular, you know, has a key role to play. What you say, and, you know, the way you act is so important. And so, because that's a true reflection. If you say, this is my culture X, and the way you speak and act really mirror why, well, that's a confusion. It's like, well, X is not the same as Y. So I think it's so important in the healthcare setting, but also anywhere else as well, I guess. And that's the beauty because I, as I said, you know, part of my MBA and prior to that too, and we can get into sort of my interest in innovation and startups and so on and so forth. But it's actually, you learn from other discipline as well.
Yeah, so that's that continual state of evolution is you can't click your fingers and cultures change. You know, you talked about the pandemic, kind of the second wave of infections, particularly we had here in Victoria. It was about, well, what do we learn from that first wave? What do we do well? You know, I always, every time I run a culture program, I say, you know, make sure that we're not just changing things for changing sake. What was the good stuff that we did? And then what's one or two things that we can tweak moving forward? Now, innovation plays a big role in your career. Although, before we go there, what's that alternate universe? You said, oh, an alternate universe that had done something else. I don't want to leave the podcast without asking you that because people will be like, you never asked him. What's the alternate universe? Tell me that one.
So that would be on my flipping on the other side of my brain and sort of be either a writer or a documentary maker. And I love, you know, and again, being sort of bilingual, I do feel my Vietnamese is much better than my English from that sort of art side of thing. Professionally, obviously English. But yeah, I, you know, during my uni year, I did sort of a, you know, work closely with my Vietnamese community, was actually involved in, you know, on boards as well as radio program, and even sort of been involved in a student magazine in Vietnamese. So I love, in actual fact, and this is not bragging or anything like that, but I love the culture, the language. And during my uni year, I work as a qualified interpreter to complement, you know, my student sort of salary. but it's just, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's either a writer or a documentary maker.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, I love watching documentaries. I tell you what, and you said that, you know, your Vietnamese is better than your English. Your English is pretty good. So your Vietnamese is
professional. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about innovation in your workplace. You mentioned 3D printing. So that must be really transforming. And it's not about standing still, right? It'd be very easy to say, this is what we've got. Isn't it amazing? But you're constantly pushing yourselves forward and looking for the next thing, again, to really evolve and grow the culture, but to kind of continually transform, I guess, the way that you work.
Oh, absolutely. So you know, I work at St. Vincent Hospital. We celebrate our, you know, 125th years a couple of years back. That's always the culture of looking after the vulnerable patient population or the vulnerable community. But come with that is being innovative in our care. So, you know, when I talk to our regular staff, you know, new staff induction, talking about innovative care, by innovative, you got to really come up with new things to generate knowledge and look at ways to improve things. So very fortunate in working in my space, as I said, where I get to really look at new things, you know, through the ethics committee, but also managing sort of our innovation portfolio. So key thing with us is that not only that we look at drugs, but also devices, as I mentioned, in 3D printing, stem cells, tissue engineering, and so on and so forth. But we look at diagnostic, definitely during the COVID-19 pandemic, we see a lot of that, as well as digital. So you think of that 4 days in health medical research that covers pretty much everything. So digital, by that I mean not only the digital transformation, but also the AI and machine learning. Now that's, you know, it's been around, so it's not like, you know, only a few years ago, but the ability to actually learn, oh, okay, so how can we actually improve on the way we look after our patient, the way we're looking at our health services data and how we can actually leverage on that. So I think, but also the other important things worth mentioning is that in any organization, you know, I couldn't sort of stop thinking about organization. It's a bit like shipping container and, you know, we've got the big container tanker got stuck in the Suez Canal at the moment. And in a way, sometimes organizations like that get stuck. And the impact is that not only, you know, stuff on that container, that tanker, but somewhere else as well, because you have that flow-on effect. So the ability to move things, of course, you know, bigger things move slower. But I think within the organization, there's always, you know, back to my earlier points about change management, you know, you need sort of champion on the top, but also, you know, catalysts, you know, drivers from the ground up, champions on the side to really move things. And how we bring that together, I think that's critical. And so innovation means that it's almost like not quite the same as, you know, the famous story of when JFK was asking the janitor from NASA, what do you do? You know, I'm helping to put a man on the moon and so on and so forth. But I think we need to sort of embrace that culture and it starts from the leaders, but also people within as well.
Are you deliberate about innovation time? So what I mean by that is, do you specifically make time for it? Are there a number of projects that are kind of earmarked at the start of a year? Is it a little pot of money and some out? How does that work, you know, kind of when you come to innovate?
Yeah, of course. And that's, I think you have to be deliberate. You can't just, you know, innovate on paper, that's what I call. Innovate on paper, innovate on glossy brochures. I mean, that sounds cynical, but yes, it can be like that. And, you know, we refreshed our strategy recently, 2020 to 2025. And we all know, and as we're chatting before, it's 2020 just kind of avoided our calendar, you know. But so, with our strategy, you know, we deliberately said there has to be resource, talents, you know, allocate to that, because you can't just say, yeah, we're pushing on innovation and, well, you can't do that just, you know, on sort of a glossy strategy. Yeah. So again, back to that, the commitment from leaders, from boards, and from partners as well. Because the other thing I should also say, when you innovate, it has to be coming with the collaboration as well. And as I mentioned early on, when I started working, you know, my first role was that really in that sort of multidisciplinary approach, you know, you got surgeon, you got engineer, you got scientists, you got other doctors, physio. And same thing with innovation, you got to really change and work with everyone. So one of the projects that, you know, at St. Vincent, the Aikenhead Center, which is in that bioengineering, bionics, we've got surgeons, we've got doctors, we've got engineers, scientists, but also people, you know, from the business side, because you want to make sure that you actually leverage and learn from other disciplines. As much as the same way that everyone's, oh, you know, healthcare should look at aviation. Of course, there's good thing, but I think you've got to sort of balance it out. And on reflection, it's a bit like me with my sort of, you know, both cultures, the Australian and the Vietnamese, you know, the ability to say, well, what's worked really best in this environment? Mm. And I can't sort of impose, and that's the other key thing too, can't impose sort of my uniqueness of the Vietnamese culture aspects that I grew up with when I was in Vietnam on my kids, because they grew up here. Yeah. Similarly with our workers, with our teams, you really say, all right, this is what the aviation, you know, has to offer when it comes to innovation, safety, and so on and so forth. But we've got to apply to what works in healthcare. You can't just plonk checklists in healthcare and say, yeah, you should do it and expect to happen.
That's a really good lesson for people listening. So, you know, kind of what you're saying is, Vince, it's deliver about innovation. It's something that's planned for at the start of the year. It's not just like a value. I often I see organizations, you know, one of our values is innovation. It's like, cool, how much time and money do you spend on it? It's like, yeah, not enough. It's like, well, why is it a value then? why are you putting it up there? You know, and then you've got that whole culture eat strategy for breakfast, which yes. You kind of need both, right? So if you don't have a good strategy that kind of doubles down on the need for innovation, it's very hard to create a culture that values innovation and then actually spends time on it. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I sit on a few boards and advise a number of medtech and health tech startups, and absolutely, you know, you've got to get that balance right. And, you know, if you focus entirely, you know, on strategy without really the plan of actions, you won't get far. And if you're not deliberate about innovation and having no strategy, so it's a bit like, I've got this plan to go to X, but I haven't got a map to go to X. I'm just going to, you probably might get there, but you wander and you potentially get lost as well. So in a way, you know, this whole notion of, you know, it needs to be in sort of in parallel or in sort of join as well. So you've got to have to be innovative, but you've got to clearly having the strategy. But having a strategy really need to actually be actionable as well. As opposed to, you know, be really sort of inspirational and not really getting things done.
So I got one more question for you. And that's with regards to startups, because I know that's a kind of passion of yours. Do you think in your experience, I'm not necessarily asking you about the startup that you're working with now, do you think enough attention is paid to culture at a startup, or is it very much a case of we just got to get going, we've got this great idea? Do you think more can be done to kind of establish the culture of the startup in order that they can scale more effectively?
Absolutely. There's a lot. And I think, you know, I'll answer a couple of key points here. So often in startups, you know, putting my investor hat on, we often, you know, the technology, we don't look at technology. We look at the talent. I mean, technology is important. It's kind of given, but it's the talents, right? So the talents come from the people. And so, you know, it's about training as well. So, I mean, within my network, you know, I do have, you know, clinicians who are entrepreneurial, who are innovators, who are co-founders of startups and so on and so forth, but they're kind of rare. And so, but things are changing. So a couple of things is that, you know, for example, when I lecture, you know, beginning of the year to the medical, new medical students, talking about, you know, the important work that they do as a future medical doctor, but the ability to be involved on this innovation wave, because quite frankly, it's really necessary because, you know, the demise of our mining industry, manufacturing as well, you've got to really change it. And I think, you know, government is seeing that in terms of investing heavily in kind of the med tech and pharmaceutical industry, supporting program training, you know, as well as funding, because you don't just train people and it's like, oh, yep, good luck, you know, sort of be on the street and you can't innovate without resource and network and the whole notions of, you know, it takes a whole village to raise a child, it takes a whole ecosystem and a lot more than that to support startup, right? So it's the people, it's the training, the support along with that. And the other point is that bearing in mind that we've got this sort of brain gain instead of drain, a lot of expat wanting to come back now, come back to Australia, come back home. And you've got to create a system where you actually, the ability to support as well. But back to the culture as well, you can't just import culture and say, you know, the whole, I mean, which I subscribe to, you know, the whole thing about fail fast and learn from mistakes. And it takes time. You can't just expect, you know, a surgeons or doctors, you know, to, you know, have their 15 years of training in medical school and in hospital and say, you expect to fail. No, you actually have to say, give them framework to actually say, this is how you do it. And everyone's different. But so I think there's lots to be done. But the exciting part is that everyone comes together and, you know, again, government, industry partners, ventures, you know, locally and internationally as well. I think it's exciting times. Doesn't matter where you are, as I mentioned, you know, startup is like a little speedy, you know, jet ski or right through to organization like us, you know, the tanker, thankfully, we haven't been sort of stuck in the canal somewhere. Everyone move at different speed, but the culture, it's a bit like the fuel, it's a bit like, you know, the drive, and that's how we get things moving.
Awesome. The culture is the fuel. What a perfect way to finish. Tam, I want to say a huge thank you for sharing your thoughts on the Culture Makers podcast. Thank you.
No, thank you, Colin.
Thanks so much for listening to the Culture Makers podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released. If you've been inspired by today's guest, please share the link with your friends, family, or networks. If you'd like to continue your learning journey, then why not join our virtual community of Culture Makers, where our members share ideas to help them get a little bit better every day. You can find out more at www.culturemakers.community.